Thank you for joining me for the East Valley News. I'm your volunteer reader, Leslie Hunt. Today we are going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Santan and Queen Creek. So if you're ready, let's get going. Our first article is entitled, Lawmakers See Troubling Failures in Teens Slaying. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune, June 2, 2025, and written by Cecilia Chan. 14-year-old Emily Pike's only home up to last year was in the mountainous community of Peridot on the San Carlos Apache Indian Reservation in southeastern Arizona. But after she was sexually assaulted, Emily was pulled from her family and the life she knew and placed in foster care nearly 100 miles away. The homesick teen was in a Mesa Group home on the night she climbed out her bedroom window in January. 3 weeks after Emily was reported missing, her dismembered remains were found Valentine's Day in trash bags along U.S. 60 north of Globe in Gila County, not far from the San Carlos Apache Reservation. A joint legislative oversight committee recently convened a hearing to consider solutions to safeguard children in the custody of state-sanctioned group homes. What they found included a lack of communication, collaboration, and oversight that ultimately led to Emily's murder. I look forward to our stakeholder meetings and coming back together and putting out a full report with proposed legislation and changes to policy that will make a positive difference for all our Arizona children, said Senator Corrine Werner, Republican, Scottsdale, who chaired the committee. Whether they live on tribal land or not, they are Arizona children and they deserve to be protected and advocated for. What happened with Emily was just tragic. And it was so unnecessary, and she should be here today, said Werner, who also is a Scottsdale Unified Governing Board member. I am just so sorry that our system failed her, and I'm sorry for the family who no longer have Emily here, and I am absolutely committed to honoring Emily and ensuring that her death was not in vain. Senate Majority Caucus spokeswoman Kim Quintero said that Werner and her policy advisor will likely work on the logistics of the first stakeholder meeting in the coming weeks. As for a report, that will most likely become available towards the end of the year after stakeholder meetings have concluded and in anticipation for the next legislative session, Quintero said. The day before the May 14th hearing, Governor Katie Hobbs inked Emily's Law, named after the teen, which sets up a turquoise alert system for missing Indigenous people under the age of 65. This came 3 days before what would have been Emily's 15th birthday. The director of the State Department of Child Safety and members from Mesa Police, Gila County Sheriff's Office, and Emily's family spoke at the nearly three-hour hearing. The operator of Sacred Journey Incorporated Group Home did not participate due to pending wrongful death litigation. State oversight detailed. DCS Director Catherine Tack detailed when the department has jurisdiction over Native children as tribes are recognized as sovereign nations. When a child is enrolled in a tribe, as Emily was, and living on tribal land, the department has no jurisdiction, even while the child is staying in a state-licensed group home, according to Tack. Emily was removed and put into the group home by Tribal Social Services. DCS licenses and oversees all group homes in the state and contracts for beds with some of them. Tack noted that the San Carlos Tribe had its own contract with Sacred Journey. San Carlos Apache Tribe has a small group home on site, but at the time had no room for Emily. When a child runs away, there are things in the rules that the group homes must do, Tack said. So the rules required that they contact DCS hotline and the placing entities. They have to contact the police and they must make attempts to contact the child. Senator Teresa Hatahi, Democrat, Tuba City, who is Navajo, told Tack that state statute requires DCS to report missing, abducted, and runaway children under its care. Tack pointed out that the tribe had exclusive jurisdiction over Emily. Hatahi questioned why the department is unable to report, quote, any type of situation that these kids fall in, end quote, when, quote, they come to a group home, even if they are under the jurisdiction of a tribe because of the facility was licensed by the state, end quote. Does it say somewhere in these rules that, quote, "Yes, we license you, but if you have a contract with any tribe, then we're not responsible for those kids. These tribal kids," end quote. Hatahe said, "I just want to see something black and white, because when you absolve responsibility for a child, no matter what ethnicity they're from, it's still a child." Tax said the rules require that for any sort of unusual incident, the group home must call the department's 24-hour hotline and the placing entity, in Emily's case, the tribe. If the department has custody of a child who goes missing, the state's missing children law is triggered, which sets the protocol for reporting and notifications such as contacting police, the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, family members, and friends, according to TAC. Hatahe continued to press TAC and pointed to 2023 legislation that requires DCS to begin notification within 24 hours of missing, abducted, or runaway children. Pike said that the statute specifically says children in the custody of the department. "I'd like to make that recommendation to make sure that it should be for all Arizonans and not pick and choose who the statute should apply to," Hatahe said. Emily Pike was born in the state of Arizona, resided in Arizona all of her life, Hatahe said. "We can't just sit by and say, well, we can't help you because they're not under our jurisdiction. We can't use that excuse anymore when children are dying." Werner said it was her understanding that the group home staff was unaware about the severe trauma that led Emily being placed there. "It's like the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing," Werner said. "We have to bridge that gap so that if a tribal child goes into DCS care or into a licensed facility, that information is either transferred over or shared so that everyone can know what is happening." Moving forward, Werner wanted to see DCS and the tribes have some way of sharing data on a native child in state care. Representative Selena Bliss, Republican, Prescott, and committee co-chair asked TAC her suggestions for her department that would avert such tragedies in the future. "I would say two things," TAC responded. "One is rules. I think they are over-inclusive of who group homes have to report to us as missing. So if a kid says, I want to go to my girlfriend's house, and the group home says, not until you're done with your homework, and the kid says, I'm going anyway, and leaves, that group home now has to alert DCS and it becomes a police matter," TAC said. Hatahe, who's worked with youth, said that it was evident that communication is a factor that needs to be addressed in the licensing, regulation, and oversight of DCS and the group homes. She said it was important to look at the facilities where the children are being placed and noted on the DCS's website she saw so many deficiencies for these group homes. "And when it comes to children, there should be no splitting of hairs on whose jurisdiction these cases fall under," Hatahe said. "I think as an entity, the Department of Child Services really does need to regulate based on ensuring all kids are provided a safe, positive, and trusting environment. I don't hear that when it comes to children being in these facilities. Kids don't run from environments where there is trust." Emily's sexual assault. Werner focused many questions on what brought Emily to a group home. She said Emily probably should have never gone to a group home based on the initial things that happened to her, referring to the sexual assault. Werner said that the initial report of Emily's assault was July 13th, but the forensic interview didn't take place until almost 30 days later. Tax said her department never received the July 13th report. She also said that DCS did not receive a call from the tribe or from the group home that Emily was missing. "Emily was victimized, which was the start of this journey for her," Werner said. "She didn't do anything wrong. She was the victim. I would say she was brutalized, and ultimately the path to her leading to a group home almost seemed like she was punished for being victimized. I find that absolutely abhorrent, and we need to fix that piece of it." Terry Ross, the tribe's social services director, explained that every effort is made to place a child with family members, but if no one is available, emergency foster care placement is the next option. Ross also said that it takes time to arrest and remove a perpetrator, and when there is no alternative, the child must be the one removed. "What I experience with our tribe is that all families will support the perpetrator," Ross said, "and we can't do anything but to remove the child, place it in our group youth home if it's available, or in a placement at a girls' group home off the reservation. It's all a process of arresting the perpetrator, even sometimes to the extent the perpetrator might admit to doing what he did, it's still that process of taking him and putting him in jail. Werner again remarked that the system absolutely failed Emily. In addressing the sexual assault claims by anyone, whether it be a juvenile or adult, our officers respond as quickly as possible, San Carlos Apache Police Chief Elliot Sneezy said. He also pointed out that it was a tough job for his officers to patrol the 1.8 million acre San Carlos Apache Reservation with 17,000 tribal members living in scattered housing. Werner questioned why tribal game and fish officers responded to Emily's 911 call that went to the San Carlos Apache Police Department. To the best of my knowledge, part of the reason why that call was given to the Game and Fish Department to locate her because it was in a rural area, a very desolate area, Sneezy said. Game and Fish is the experts on locating people in these types of areas. However, looking at calls, we were also busy. As I mentioned, we cover a lot of area, and I think at the time we only had about 22 police officers. Werner said that Emily called 911 for help, and the next thing, she ends up in a group home. She then asked the chief for his solution to improve the process. When it comes to some of the issues, they obviously start in San Carlos, and that has to be dealt with internally, and that's where the investigation of ourselves has to happen, Sneezy said. Externally, when it comes to how things played out in February for us, especially in these group homes with Native American kids, they shouldn't be looked at as runaways when they're missing. We can all work together so this doesn't happen again, he said. I can't promise 100% that this won't ever happen again, but we can do a pretty good job at trying to make it tough for anybody to do this to a little girl. Tribal reps, family speak. The crime must not go unsolved, Tribal Chairman Terry Rambler told the committee, noting the tribe and the FBI each offered $75,000 reward to help solve Emily's murder. He suggested the state do the same. Rambler also requested that legislature tighten up regulations for residential group homes. Every child in a group home should be safe and secure in a positive, nurturing environment, Rambler said. There are over 7,000 kids in placement. According to DCS last month, the number of runaways was over 110, and there were about 10 missing. However, all runaways should be considered missing until located. According to TAC, 81.53% of children are located within 24 hours, and that the number of runaways dropped by 34% since February 2024. Rambler said that when Emily ran away, Mesa police did not alert the reservation or the tribe's Child Protective Services, and no Amber Alert was issued. He also noted that Emily was able to leave from her room's window because the window alarm was disabled. Rambler said that had Emily had a cell phone, perhaps her fate might have been different. Tribe Vice Chairman Tao Ittison said his concern is the level of supervision, monitoring, and restrictions for a child in the group home. We need to increase those levels to where it's more assuring that our children are safe in these homes, Ittison said, noting that legislation passed or proposed bills pertain to abuse by group home employees, but not their neglect. Alexander Ritchie, the tribe's attorney general, hammered home the importance of not classifying children that run away as such. Every CPS worker, they go through a process. Quote, oh yeah, she's probably with a boyfriend, or he's with a girlfriend, they're just a runaway, end quote, Ritchie said. And so then they step back. The problem with that is there ought to be, since these are children, a much higher burden, which would come if they are missing and not if they're running away. There are monsters out there, and they take advantage of kids because kids are the most defenseless. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Today we are focusing on the news of the past week for Santan and Queen Creek. My name is Leslie Hunt, your volunteer reader. Continuing on, Mesa Police Cite Confusion. Mesa Police Assistant Chief Gina Nesbitt explained her department's process in handling a report of a missing person and the three different tiers of responses. Officers are also required within 2 hours of responding to a call to enter the information into the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children system. NCIC decides whether to disseminate the bulletin, Nesbitt said. According to Nesbitt, the department goes through its missing people reports daily, giving particular attention to those cases where the child is in DCS custody. There are a lot of variables when it comes to our responses to missing persons, she said. 2 days after Mesa Police was alerted by the group home to Emily's disappearance, the department released a missing runaway juvenile bulletin. In the case with Emily, there was a little confusion initially on the form that we received, Nesbitt said. We were told DCS, Ward of the State, and that was initially how we entered it into the system. It wasn't until later we realized that it was actually a ward of the tribe. Lieutenant Jim Lottie from the Gila County Sheriff's Office said, I noticed there seemed to be a little bit of concern as far as how runaways may be handled different than missing children. In our Gila County Sheriff's policy, we don't really differentiate between the two, he added. We use those terms missing person and runaways, but anyone who's a runaway, we handle as a missing person. She was a 14-year-old girl, basically on her own, on medication. Something good has got to come out of this, and I do believe, hearing everyone today, that there is a sincere want to change the way that we do things. I commit, and I'm sure the whole legislature commits, to finding solutions to make sure this never happens again. Emily's mother, Stephanie Dosala, in a prepared statement, thanked Hobbs for Emily's law and the public for its support. Dosala was unable to attend as she was still grieving her daughter's death, according to Gail Pachuli, who read the statement, quote, My daughter Emily Carla Pike was a 14-year-old Apache girl who was murdered in the most heinous way and left on the side of the road in garbage bags, Dosala wrote. My Emily had bright smile. She loved her cat, Millie. Her delight was creating drawings that evolved into beautiful art. She was full of dreams and had so much more to give. My Emily also made my day. I miss her so much, end quote. Dosala said that moving to a big city was a culture shock for Emily. Quote, My Emily only knew her home in Peridot, end quote, she said. Quote, She mentioned to her grandmother on how she missed home-cooked meals, including her traditional foods like acorn soup and tortillas, and about rolling out her dough for making her golden fried bread for her family, end quote. Dosala also clarified media reports that Emily suffered from a mental health issue, stating, quote, To the contrary, she was dealing with the effects of trauma. My Emily was showing physical and emotional turmoil in which she was in the process of seeking professional help, end quote. She also questioned why OASIS, the first facility Emily was taken to, was not at the hearing. My request is to have OASIS answer to the services and conditions that my Emily endured there, she said. She also asked that DCS examine the decision-making that moved Emily from a Level 1 facility down to a Level 4, less restrictive group home, instead of a gradually moving her between the levels. She also said the group home should have reported Emily as missing instead of as a runaway. She also requested that her tribe change its policies and procedures for, quote, underage Apache children under the care of tribal services, end quote. Alred Pike Jr. said he was the brother of Emily's father, who is currently incarcerated. My niece was a victim, but yet she was punished and removed from her home, he said. That's how justice failed her. The person that she accused of hurting her got to go home. How is that justice? It's just backwards. She got sent away to a place that she's not familiar with, away from her family. It's culture shock, plain and simple. Emily might not be here, but she's making a difference in the world, Pike said. She's helping make changes in areas that need to be addressed. That's why we're here. End of story. Our next article is entitled GOP Primary Brawl Emerges for State Schools Chief. This was posted in the Queen Creek Tribune June 1, 2025, and written by Howard Fisher. Unable to seek re-election, State Treasurer Kimberly Yee now wants to become the top education official in Arizona. Yee said last week she believes she could do a better job as superintendent of public instruction than fellow Republican Tom Horn. A state lawmaker before being elected treasurer in 2018, she can serve only 2 4-year terms. Yi said students in Arizona are falling behind academically. But what appears to be driving her race is that Horn has refused to allow some parents who are getting vouchers of state funds to homeschool their children to make expensive purchases he calls academically unjustified. Horn has been a consistent supporter of vouchers, both for parents to use for tuition for private and parochial schools, as well as those engaged in various forms of homeschooling. But he has run afoul of some voucher supporters after the Department of Education denied reimbursement to parents for items like a $5,000 Rolex watch, a $24,000 golf simulator, and even a vasectomy testing kit. That issue led Queen Creek Republican Jake Hoffman, chairman of the Arizona Freedom Caucus, composed of conservative Republicans, to ask Yi to run. Yi said Horn had no right to deny the expenses. "I believe in school choice and an educational free marketplace," she said. Yi said that the law created vouchers or empowerment scholarship accounts limits the ability of Horn or any other state school chief to overrule what a parent concludes is or is not an appropriate need for a child. "I believe the state superintendent, if there's any question on how to administer the program, should not be making those exclusive decisions on his own," Yi said. "He needs to go back to the legislative process, which is appropriate, and work with the legislature to additionally add those protections." Anyway, she said, the examples that Horn and others have cited of improper expenses comprise just 0.01% the total nearly $1 billion spent on vouchers. Horn, for his part, said he and his agency are following the law, and that, he said, is based on two principles. Is the expenditure for a legitimate purpose, and is it a reasonable cost? And in a prepared statement, Horn said the fact that the parent handbook doesn't specifically bar the questioned expenses does not mean he is powerless to reject them. In writing a handbook, who would predict that someone would ask for a $5,000 Rolex watch, he said. If the department had granted all requests as urged by the department's adversaries, it would have been big news. The public would have reacted and the survivability of the program would be in question, Horn said. Because the department strongly favors parental choice, the survivability of the program is a high priority. He also pointed out that any parent denied reimbursement for an expense can seek review by a hearing officer and ultimately the State Board of Education. Horn said none of those appeals have succeeded. But Horn made it clear he recognizes the objections to the decisions his agency has made, not just from parents, but also from some lawmakers. "The department has been engaged with legislative leadership to reach a compromise," he said, "and it is anticipated that a revised parent handbook proposal that is more favorable will result." At her press conference, Yi also complained that student achievement has faltered under Horn's leadership and that many students who had been in schools prior to the COVID pandemic had not returned. But Yi offered no concrete proposals for how she would change that. The fight to be GOP nominee comes as state lawmakers are debating whether and how to continue Proposition 123. Approved by voters in 2016, it has provided an additional approximately $350 million a year for K-12 education by making additional withdrawals from a special trust account. That measure expires this year, and lawmakers have agreed to absorb that additional $350 million into the regular state budget. Both Republicans and Democrat Governor Katie Hobbs want the additional trust fund withdrawals to continue to provide additional dollars to public schools. But GOP lawmakers now want the measure to extend the withdrawals to also include a constitutional protection for vouchers. Hobbs has declared that a non-starter. Yi declined to take a stance on the GOP plan to link the issues, saying she hasn't seen the details. "I'll take a look at what the proposal looks like going forward," she said. End of story. Our next article is entitled PCSO Deputy Shoots, Kills a Man in Santan Valley. This was posted in the Queen Creek Independent, May 29th, 2025, and written by Janet Pettis. A man was shot dead in Santan Valley by a Pinal County Sheriff's Office deputy responding to a domestic violence call. Around 9:30 a.m. Wednesday, PCSO received a call reporting a domestic violence incident involving a disorderly man who was breaking things inside of a home on Casey Lane near Skyline Drive and Gary Road. Deputies arrived at the home and attempted to de-escalate the situation. Quote, during the call, Kyle Webster, 29, grabbed a knife and a pocket tool and advanced toward a deputy. The deputy shot Webster and he was pronounced deceased in the home, end quote, according to a statement from PCSO. End of story. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Santan and Queen Creek. My name is Leslie Hunt. I'm your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand? Did you know you can take Sun Sounds with you? You can get our stream and on demand on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. Did you also know you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device? Thanks for listening to Sun Sounds. We have more interesting programs on the way. Be safe out there.